For Tuesday, February 12th, and Lincoln's birthday, and we heard from Mr. Lincoln today. He's looking pretty good despite his age. And I hope that we can all say the same about ourselves after this session is over. So we have two things on the agenda today. We have our work session on Senate Bill 1084, and then we have an informational meeting, and I will open the work session on Senate Bill 1084. And who wants to present the amendments? Is there anybody in particular who wants to do that, or do you want me to explain them?
Me.
Okay. Okay, colleagues, we have two amendments before us, a dash 5 and a dash 6. The dash 5 is designed to make it clear that that a road authority may issue a permit that authorizes a pedestrian or group to be positioned on or proceed along a highway if they show the following satisfaction: proof of liability, that they will meet the public safety requirements, and they shall have a copy of the permit to any applicable, shall provide a copy to any applicable jurisdiction. The dash 6 amendment essentially is a sunset amendment that, should this pass, that that this piece of legislation will then be sunsetted after, let's see, after July 1st, 2011, which would then require this legislature, if they thought this was a good thing to do, to have to re-up this piece of legislation, or at least have to reconsider it if we're going to move in that direction. So with that, I would like to have someone speak in support or opposition to amendments, but I would like to see who's going to speak in support of the amendments. Senator Devlin, okay?
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, for the record, Senator Richard Devlin, I thank the committee for all the time that you have given to consideration of this particular bill. I know it has been a particularly difficult bill to deal with. The issues have been extremely complex. We have tried to the best of our abilities to preserve something that I think is very beneficial to the public in terms of the firefighters' activities, in terms of fundraising for the Muscular Dystrophy Association. We have tried to do that in such a way that we meet constitutional muster, which has actually taken us some time to actually get to a point where we've done that. We have effectively done, we've effectively met what we believe is the constitutional muster on the issue. You've heard both from Legislative Council and the Solicitor General and the Attorney General's office that they have, do not have any significant constitutional concerns about the bill. An issue has arisen as to a concern that because the bill does not identify now a group or an individual, that other parties might utilize this for similar types of fundraising activities. Well, that is perhaps a concern. I do not believe that that will come to fruition, nor do I believe it will present a significant issue for the public. And if I had more time here today, I could explain. But I think, in fairness to that concern, one way to address that would be to put a sunset on the bill, which is what we have effectively done with the Dash 6 amendments, which would sunset January 2nd, 2012. But a permit would not be issued past the date in July. That's simply because the permit lasts a certain period of time, and so a permit would not occur after the date in July of 2011. That would give the legislature plenty of time to consider whether or not they wanted to extend the sunset or let the legislation pass itself. And that would give us a considerable amount of time to see if any of these issues or concerns that people might have about parties that might become involved in this other than the firefighters would actually come to fruition. I do not believe that will happen. I think, quite honestly, because of the nature of the bill and because we've had to craft this around security issues, safety issues, particularly the safety issues, that it's very clear that those are very significant in this particular issue, this area, and that by looking at those safety issues, you can see that there are not a whole lot of people that would want to actually get out in a situation where they would face those kinds of safety issues or have liability for them. Firefighters all over the nation have been doing this for more than 50 years. I think I was about 2 years old when they first started doing this. It is something that has benefited the Muscular Dystrophy Association in very broad ways. It's something I'd like to see to continue, and I can't believe in this day and age that we've become so complex, so litigious in our discussions, that we can't continue something like this that has been in place for more than 50 years.
Thank you, Senator Devlin, and I do appreciate your work on this. Questions for Senator Devlin. Senator George?
Thank you. Senator, you know, in Dash 5, we have a couple of, in Section 3, it refers to the group or the pedestrian or the group shows a satisfactory safety issue to the road authority. But also it has the $1 million insurance issue, again, liability. After we left the building the other day, I put a phone call into an insurance agent that I knew could write such a policy. And I asked the question, how much would it cost? John Q. walks in off the street, said, we're going to do a fundraiser out along the edge of the street. And he said, oh, like Fill the Boot. Oh, yeah, I donate to this all the time, he said. So he was very sympathetic of the Fill the Boot effort. But he said, Gary, you can assume about $500 for about 4 hours, so basically 8 to 12, and about $100 an hour for the rest of the day. And then the issue will be, I ask him, well, what about a person that, you know, might be doing extended type of fundraiser? And the answer was, if it went very far down the road as far as time, he said, I doubt anyone could afford it, and I doubt that anyone would write the issue because of the liability. Now, my question is, this whole issue of being fair to everyone, if in fact those are the rates on the insurance, do you believe we can put $1 million requirement on them and still meet constitutional muster?
Yes, I do. In fact, I've had the discussion directly with the Solicitor General, and she has assured me that she could defend that case. Now, I do have to tell you, it is $1 million liability coverage. I, for one, and I don't know, I think many of my colleagues also, have rented public facilities for political purposes. And rented parks for political purposes. I have rented multi-purpose facilities for political purposes. In almost all cases, I've had to provide liability insurance. I have paid as much as $300 for a two-hour event to ensure that a city was assured that the parties that I had at the event there, that I had the liability coverage to cover them. And I have had to do that both in the case of when I was serving, I don't actually drink, and many of you know that, but when there was alcoholic beverages being served, and I've had to do it in cases where nothing was being served, simply because public entities want to have the liability coverage in place. And now that is a very direct connection to political speech, which usually the courts are most protective of. And I can't believe that this would have any significant problem in standing a constitutional challenge. At least that's what I have been assured of by the parties that are more knowledgeable in this area than I am.
Other questions for Senator Devlin?
Mr. Chair, would you be looking for motions on?
Well, I think I want to hear a little bit more first, and then we'll do that. But thank you. I will.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
And thank you, committee members, for your indulgence.
Again, this is a work session, but I will ask if there's anybody else that wants to speak in support of the amendments. Okay. Is there anybody who would like to speak in opposition to the amendments? Ms. Meyer.
Chair Metzger, members of the committee, Andre Meyer, legislative director for the ACLU of Oregon. I want to reiterate that we are not unaware of the positive need for this. It's not our intention to try to stop someone. It is my role here, and I feel it's a very important role we serve to alert you to when something is either, we believe, facially unconstitutional, as I did with the original bill, or very vulnerable to an attack. I continue to maintain, and the insight of my cooperating attorneys that I've also looked to, that the Dash 6s or the Dash 5s with that $1 million liability make it vulnerable to an attack. Now, I don't necessarily disagree with the Solicitor General that she could defend that. You certainly will make a case. I need to say I think we're pretty good on our record on free speech cases in the courts in Oregon. I know you may not approve or appreciate all of that, but we have a pretty good record on that. I do want to distinguish a little bit legally in terms of the needing to rent a facility and the cost that you all pay. That's one for an exclusive use of a building quite distinguish, I think, from where you're creating a public forum. Again, if I were to take over the whole sidewalk, I might have to get a permit, although I do not believe there would be $1 million liability for taking over the whole sidewalk. That becomes insufficient, a barrier that is impermissible. But just to carry a picket sign, and I'm not having exclusive use of that sidewalk, I don't need to rent it in that manner. And I contend that the use we're talking about here is not exclusive use to rent a facility or a place. So that's how I would distinguish it. I just want to reiterate, because the Dash 2s that Senator Metzger did offer, I believe, have safeguards that will, in reality, make it only those you really intend to take advantage of this, because there are hurdles there that folks have to go to through, but it does not have that $1 million liability. That raises the red flag for us, and we would just... There's nothing more than I'd like to not oppose this bill and to step back. And so I would hope you discuss and encourage you to look at the Dash 2s. The sunset, I haven't been able to entirely process Dash 6 and how I believe it's on top of whatever amendments, but a sunset is fine. But I hope you will discuss the Dash 2s as a way to, hopefully, I would think, make everyone happy and move forward and allow this to happen in a way that we think isn't vulnerable. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Meyer. Senator George.
The other issue in the Dash 5s, of course, is B, and post-advance warning signs and compliance. And as we talked, and I did a little bit more research on that also and found out that those signs are going to be about $65 to $80 each, plus the supporting structure, which is another $65 to $80. So let's call it, so now we're $260 in addition to the $500 for the 4 hours. That would be pretty hard hurdle for someone to jump over. I'm comfortable with the discretion that is allowed to the department under the Dash 2. Any comment about that other requirement that may, in fact, add cost to the ability of the person to participate?
Right, Chair Metzger, Senator George. In fact, actually, when you look at the Dash 5s, because part of it's in bold, and I tend to just go to that and think that's the amendment. Actually, all of the Dash 5s are criteria, so I don't want us to lose sight that you are not allowed to impede traffic. You have to post advance warning signs. And yes, to the degree that you place hurdles, if someone has to take extra steps, costly steps, it makes it vulnerable to someone claiming that they, dependent on their financial situation, cannot access a public forum or an area where others are allowed to engage in lawful speech. The Dash 2s talk about not impeding traffic and wearing highly visible safety apparel within the standards adopted by ODOT. So those do have criteria that I think get to making sure someone's visible, making sure they don't impede the traffic. And I'm not sure it's easy to get highly visible safety apparel alone. I mean, that still does take someone to actually go out and get that. I think it's probably the low threshold that would way more likely withstand a constitutional challenge as a barrier. It is a barrier, but I think it's low enough than the other ones set forth in the Dash 5s. And anything that relates to additional costs without waivers for people who otherwise cannot afford it are additional grounds for why it can be challenged.
Any other questions for Ms. Meyer? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who would like to speak in opposition to the Dash 5 or 6 amendments? Okay. Then, Senator Johnson, I would entertain a motion.
Mr. Chair, I would move the Dash 5 amendments to SB 1084.
Okay, Senator Johnson has moved the Dash 5 amendment to Senate Bill 1084. Discussion on the Dash 5. Let's take a roll call vote, please, on the Dash 5.
Senator Gary George?
No.
Senator Larry George?
Excused.
Senator Johnson?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Starr?
Excused.
And Chair Metzger?
Aye. Senator Johnson.
Mr. Chair, I would move the Dash 6 amendments to Senate Bill 1084.
Senator Johnson has moved the Dash 6 amendment to Senate Bill 1084, which is the sunset provision. Discussion on that amendment. Okay. Let's take a roll call.
Senator Gary George?
No.
Senator Larry George?
Excused.
Senator Johnson?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Starr.
Excused.
And Chair Metzger.
Aye.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Johnson.
I would move the amended SB 1084 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Johnson has moved Senate Bill 1084 as amended by the Dash 5 and Dash 6 amendments to the Senate floor with the due pass recommendation. Discussion on the final action. Well, I have something I'd like to add. If it's the will of the committee to move forward, I will provide a courtesy vote on this. I actually agree, even though I'm not an attorney, as I keep saying, that I feel comfortable with legislative counsel and solicitor general that this is, would be constitutional. And clearly, the committee has made it very clear that the great work that our firefighters do, this is important to continue. And we don't want to be an impediment to the great work that they do for muscular dystrophy. And Senator Evans pointed out very correctly, we have a very litigious society now, and sometimes we lose sight of where we're going. And I would say that wholeheartedly. But here's my concern, and I think it's important to be on the record. I was telling folks I was having visions of the 20 miles an hour, 24-hour a day school bill that sounded like we were doing the right thing, only to find out that in trying to focus on doing the right thing, we broadened things so much that we had some issues. And here's my concern on this, is that being in the roadway is something that is a traffic hazard, and we don't allow that. We don't condone that in our transportation policy. And so now what we're doing, because we're trying to get to this very good thing of codifying that our firefighters can continue the great work they do, we have now opened up an opportunity for any organization to stop traffic, and whether they're collecting contributions or whether they're supporting candidates or initiative signatures, whatever they want to do, we now have a pathway and we can't discriminate. If they meet these requirements, they can go out at 5 o'clock and stop traffic and do this. And now maybe they won't do that. I don't know. And it may be some organization that we don't like, and maybe one we love. It's like, you know, maybe the American Cancer Society, which we love, say, hey, this is a good thing for us, too. Or maybe it's, you know, Dornbecker will do this. And that's all wonderful, except I think we have to be prepared. And why I appreciate Senator Devlin's amendment with the sunset provision, so that, you know, I think none of us want to all of a sudden get calls from constituents saying, what are you doing? You know, we can't ever get through traffic anymore because there's always somebody out there doing something. And that's just the broad policy scope that I'm concerned about as we try to perform something for a very good cause, broadening things up and all of a sudden having the unintended consequences. I hope that we're right in our assumptions that this won't be, but it should be clear we have opened this, our roadways up to anyone to stop traffic and solicit contributions, and we can't discriminate under the Constitution, obviously, if they make the same application. So I have to put that on the record. I feel it's my responsibility to do that, and that is my concern, but I'm not going to use, because of the good work we're trying to accomplish, and I don't want to have my will imposed, because maybe not everyone has the same level of concern. So with that, we have a motion, and we'll take a roll call.
Senator Gary George?
No.
Senator Larry George?
Excuse.
Senator Johnson?
Aye.
Senator Monroe?
Aye.
Senator Berger?
Aye.
Vice Chair Starr?
Excuse.
Chair Metzger.
I'll try to courtesy aye, and it passes. So this will be going through the floor, and who would like to carry the bill?
Why not Senator Devlin?
Of course. Senator Devlin, would you please carry the bill?
Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank everyone for their hard work on this, and thank you. Thank you, Senator Devlin. Thank you very much. Okay. We're going to close the work session, Senate Bill 1084, open an informational hearing on the Cornelius Pass safety issues. And, Patrick, who's going to introduce the issue for us?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, members. We have Jim Smith here, who's the director of the Taja Bellwood Foundation. I believe he was listed as the first speaker to come up. I didn't know if Senator Johnson wanted to.
Senator Johnson, would you like to maybe set the stage for us here?
I would be more than happy to do that, Mr. Chair. First of all, I want to tell you how much I appreciate your courtesy in allowing this informational hearing, and I want to acknowledge my colleague, Representative Brad Witt, who has also joined us today. the genesis of this informational meeting was the tragic death of a young high school student in Scappoose coming over a dangerous road in wintertime conditions, and she lost her life. And from that tragic accident has come a clarion call from the community to look at the issues surrounding safety on Cornelius Pass and to see if, in cooperation with Multnomah County, Washington County, because Multnomah and Washington own half of the road, and Columbia County, because it feeds into the main arterial that serves Columbia County, and that's Highway 30, if perhaps out of this tragedy we can institute safety provisions that would prevent any other family. And these are her colleagues from high school. Many of these students have come today. That would prevent them from ever experiencing a loss of this tragic magnitude again. And so I thank you for your courtesy in allowing this informational hearing. And with that, I would turn the podium over to the people that have come to tell their story and to tell Tasia's story.
Thank you, Senator Johnson. Representative Witt, would you like to comment before we begin, or it's up to you?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Brad Witt, State Representative from House District 31, and I appreciate your courtesy, Mr. Chairman, in allowing me the opportunity to say just a few words. I am by no means a traffic or highway safety expert, but I will tell you that anyone who has traveled over Cornelius Pass, I think, would be in agreement that it is a potentially very, very dangerous road. To the extent that we probably don't have adequate traffic lighting systems, to the extent that we have diverted commercial and heavy truck traffic that oftentimes is diverted simply because they're carrying hazardous cargo, to the extent that it's a highway that is shaded and in the winter months is prone to icing and not thawing out during the daytime. Sharp curves, very steep grade, and on and on and on. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this is a very, very dangerous road. It is a road that much of my constituency shared with Senator Johnson uses on a regular basis to access the Sunset Highway. The reverse is also true for folks from Washington County. And it is a very, very sad commentary, committee members, that we have had to wait until we have lost the life of a very young person.
Thank you, Representative. Senator George, I'd like to ask you a question, Representative.
Representative, well, either one of you answer this question. One of the things that I've noticed is that as we have had the development of a market for all of the grass seed straw that we now have going over Cornelius Pass, particularly not only from Washington County but Yamhill, from Polk County, we have these massive long doubles that are trying to make their way through there. Now, I'm a CDL licensed truck driver, and I'm going to tell you what, I can't even imagine having to go that way. But if you think about it, to force them up the Sunset or to force them down 99, down through the middle of Portland in order to get to the place they need to go to get their product loaded on a ship, we need to spend the money to get this road fixed. And I just, in any comment as to what you locals are seeing relative to the change in usage to much larger trucks.
Well, thank you, Senator, Mr. Chairman, members. There are bigger trucks, there are longer trucks, there is more dangerous cargo, the traffic, it just gets heavier and heavier. More truck traffic, more diversions, larger population, greater need to sustain our commerce and people getting to and fro work and everything else in their lives. This is an absolutely critical highway through several counties, as you have just mentioned, and we simply have not made the necessary accommodations for the traffic demands on that road.
Mr. Chair.
Yes, Senator Johnson.
The only thing that I would add is that I don't want to turn this into a vilification of the trucking industry, because it is not the trucking industry's problem. In fact, one of the first representatives that I reached out to was the trucking industry, and they couldn't have been more helpful in encouraging this public forum to discuss this road. I don't take exception to anything that my colleague said. The road has manifold other safety problems, and I'm sure the truckers would be just as appreciative to see the safety improvements, particularly when you think of parts of that road that have no shoulder, not a narrow shoulder, but no shoulder. And as a courtesy to Senator Verger, I think all the rest of this panel know exactly where this road is. If you don't mind, I'll just take a moment to explain it. If you can picture Highway 26 that runs directly from the coast into Portland, Highway 30 is on the other side of a set of hills, and it runs from Astoria into Portland. And this is a very heavily used road that goes over that set of hills, so that if a car chooses to come off of the Sunset Highway, Highway 26, to try to get into northwest Portland or out into the industrial area, a car or a truck, it has no choice but to come over this very twisty, it runs down in a very twisty, narrow road that I think was designed a long time ago and just had pavement put over what was probably dirt, and over time has now metamorphosized into a very heavily trafficked road. But I realize suddenly we all know what we're talking about, and you don't know where Cornelius Pass is coming from your part of Oregon. But that was the only thing I wanted to add. The trucking industry was enormously helpful when I asked them for assistance in talking about this issue.
Mr. Chairman, yes. Can I clarify my question? And certainly not vilifying. As a CDL truck driver, what we have is a change in commerce and a change in demand. And it's not the trucker's fault. It's our fault for not meeting the transportation needs. You know, by getting that road fixed to where, in fact, it is safe for not only our young people, but for folks that have to deliver commodities to and from the port.
Mr. Chairman, Senator George, you are exactly right on the mark.
Senator Monroe.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Witt. I'm very interested in traffic safety and particularly in bicycle safety. I actually rode down that piece of road with my two brothers on bicycles and found it to be very dangerous and a concern. Do you know how much that road is used by bicyclists? Is it frequent or just very rare?
Well, Mr. Chairman, Senator Monroe, I don't have any precise figures, but you are, having traveled that by bicycle yourself, know. First, as Senator Johnson has pointed out, there are long stretches where there is no shoulder at all. I think cyclists would be taking their life in their hands in many instances, particularly on sharp corners, particularly, as Senator George has pointed out, if we have doubles trying to negotiate hairpin turns, one hairpin stacked on top of another hairpin, it's very difficult for those trucks to be able to negotiate the corners, particularly if there's a cyclist on the side. I don't know what time of the year you were biking that road, but when the road is sanded, there is residue sand that's left over. If you're a cyclist trying to maintain or negotiate those curves on the small rock that's sanded on those roads, that bike is, you stand a very good chance of that bike going right out from underneath you. By any reasonable measure, this is an extremely dangerous road, extremely hazardous.
Mr. Chair,
well, just
okay. I do want to get to our guests here soon, okay. But go ahead, Senator Johnson.
I've driven that road for 30 years. I have never seen a bicyclist.
Okay. Well, I on my own experience, and by the way, it was in the summertime, so it wasn't as bad as in the winter. But I would certainly recommend that there be signs, at the very least, that say "not recommended for bicycles," something of that nature, because that's, you know, a very dangerous piece of road, and particularly dangerous, I would think, for bicycles.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Monroe, you are absolutely right. And you know, not trying to engage in hyperbole here, but I'm on the verge of being convinced that we ought to put hazardous signs on for traffic, period, on that road.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Representative Witt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Greenleaf, you've come in. And would you like to address the body, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm Representative Mitch Greenleaf, House District 33, and this stretch of Cornelius Pass Road we're talking about is essentially in my district. I don't want to repeat anything Representative Witt or Senator Johnson said, but that road is an enormous concern to my constituents who use it and who walk in it and who I hope don't bicycle down it. I think you'd have to be crazy to bike down that road.
Well, meet him. There he is.
You only do it once.
It's a menace. Yeah, he's the one. You do it twice. And I've been working on it. I met last week with Jason Tell, the District 1 ODOT person to talk to from ODOT's perspective. The problem is it's a county road, and it's Washington County through part of my district and Multnomah County through another part of my district, and it's going to be very hard to figure out what ODOT can do to help, and I think how we can help, but something absolutely has to be done. One of the problems with trucks is that because of regulations with the tunnel on Highway 26, trucks with a hazardous cargo are forced off of Highway 26. And basically, we're not talking about what we normally considered hazardous cargoes. We're talking about basic petroleum trucks, many of which pick up their load down in the northwest side. It's a major fueling station. And I've asked ODOT to look at the extent to which the dangerous cargo trucks are being, to which those permits are being issued and to which those trucks are being routed from anywhere in the northwest to anywhere in the west. There isn't really much option but to go up Cornelius Pass. And I've suggested that I think it's much safer for our state and the citizens to have those trucks, taking a chance on getting them through that tunnel, which is a relatively short stretch. And I've asked them to get us numbers, which I'll make available to the committee, on how many trucks they believe are being routed specifically through Cornelius Pass rather than on Highway 26. Now, Highway 26 is a problem in its own right, and I'm not sure, you know, we all know about that, and you know about it probably more than anybody else, but I think that would be a help. I think running those trucks up and down Cornelius Pass is a problem, and I think the truckers would prefer not to do that. They would prefer to go into a more mainstream route, so we will have some information on that. But this is something that we need to get Washington County, Multnomah County, ODOT, and the City of Portland, which does much of the work for Multnomah County on the roads together, and see what we can do. And I just, you know, I'm delighted that you're holding this information meeting, and if there's anything I can do to help this process, I'm very much interested in it.
Well, thank you, Representative Greenleaf, and actually, I think you will be able to help the process, so stay tuned. Senator George.
Really quickly, you know, we do jurisdictional shifts of roadway, you know, many times from ODOT to a city and so and so. And what I'm suggesting is I think that this is such a critical piece of our transportation network with the developments that has occurred in Washington County and that is now occurring on the west side of this valley, you know, across that river over there. A lot of folks are going to want to go that way. My recommendation would be that we really consider some mechanism to get this into the hands of ODOT with the development plans for a major highway improvement, because it is critical to commerce in addition to the safety of our citizens to have a road that's adequate for the need.
Well, I must say, Mr. Chair, Senator George, I think that idea is great. Current fiscal on fixing 217 is approaching $1 billion, and that makes 217 a whole different set of problems. But I just can't imagine what the fiscals would be on this to make Cornelius Pass Road a road fit for major traffic and major truck traffic. There, in some places, literally, I think, is no room to make that highway a better highway. We might need to figure out some other kinds of options, like making it one way down and Germantown Roadway one way up or something. I mean, I would love to see the state pick it up, and I would love to see it turned into a major highway, as we do things like develop North Bethany and some of the other areas. The west end of my district is growing enormously fast, and since people can't really get to 26, make any sense out of it, Burnside and Cornell are going to be stuffed, then Cornelius Pass is going to become an important route. But whether we can really generate the funds we need to do to make this a viable option is, I think, questionable. Although I'm not on Ways and Means. Senator Johnson may have a better estimate on that. But we could be talking about huge amount of money.
Thank you, Representative Greenlick. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, I'd like Elizabeth Hogginson, Jim Smith, and Mr. and Mrs. Bellwood to come forward and speak to us about this issue.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Based on the comments that have already been made, I'm going to go off my notes for just a second.
Please tell us who you are first, and then
begin. My name's Jim Smith.
Thank you.
This is Tammy Bellwood, Tasia Bellwood's mom, and Butch Bellwood.
Thank you, folks.
I'm delighted that some of the information that we want to cover today is already cognizant with the people that are here. Several points that we'll be bringing up have already been made. We do wish to say that we do not want to alienate any user group of this road, whether it be commercial trucking, whether it be bicyclists, whether it be commuters. Our ultimate goal is to make it a safe road for all users. And in that spirit, we feel like we have some recommendations that can get that done, and we would like to develop plans in that regard. On behalf of Tammy, Butch, Tasia's family, member of the Tasia Bellwood Foundation, we'd like to sincerely thank Senator Johnson for setting up this remarkable opportunity. The chairperson and the committee were honored to be here. 2 days after Tasia died, on the morning of December 31st, our friend Elizabeth Hagison called and asked if it would be appropriate to distribute a petition for signatures to have guardrails installed in Cornelius Pass Road. At that time, we really had no idea what we had gotten ourselves into. From the moment the first petition table was set up at the candlelight vigil at the high school, a logjam broke. 30 years of pent-up frustration, pain, and anger from hundreds upon hundreds of citizens had finally found a voice. And as we collected the signatures and the letters, story upon story upon story was told about the dangers of this road. And the overwhelming theme was that people are afraid of Cornelius Pass Road. We're not professional activists. We're not professional lobbyists or politicians. We are not highway engineers or transportation experts. In fact, at times we may be a tad naive. But be assured, we have learned a lot, and with the help of some experts involved in our foundation, we're learning more every day. What we are is representatives of the mothers of teenagers that drive the pass, the stay-at-home moms whose husbands commute on this road, and the mothers who transport their children over Cornelius Pass Road. They have told their stories by the thousands, and only a month they have found a voice through our foundation. The Tasia Bellwood Foundation recognizes the need for heightened awareness and public education as to the need for driver safety. In fact, the members of the Community 101 group from Scappoose High School, many of, here, of which are here today, in coordination with the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office, are already working on a driver safety module that can be taken into Washington County schools to teach young adults about inherent dangers on rural and mountainous terrain. The driver's education representative from Scappoose High School has taken over 700 students over that road. So we recognize the need for heightened awareness for driver safety. However, when driver safety fails for any reason, it's the obligation of public safety to protect the lives of the citizens. And no driver should work without a net. Drivers should not feel as if they run the gauntlet driving this road, which is a common theme that we hear. They should not describe it as like playing a video game. And when, despite the circumstances involving driver error, the lack of public safety measures fail to protect our families, friends, and neighbors. So the rhetoric needs to stop and real measures put in place. We hope to answer two questions today and to ask many more. The two questions we can answer are, what is wrong with the road, and what do we want to do about it? The questions we will ask are, what incremental changes can be made to improve safety? What is the best case scenario long term to address the issues surrounding the road and the needs of all the users, including commercial and commuters and bicyclists? How long will it take? What funding options are available? And how you can help, among others. At the end of our presentation, we'll ask for your help. Your help is needed to elevate the importance of this issue, to coordinate multi-local cooperation to find solutions, and to pledge your diligent and unrelenting effort. Tasia's parents, Butch and Tammy, will now speak about Tasia and the impact of what a single loss means to the world. Can we put that up on the...
You might separate those mics so they're not pointing towards each other. That's why we kind of get a little feedback. Yeah, there you go. We can hear you clearly that way.
Good. Tasia's favorite quote was, "The total history of almost anyone would shock almost everyone. The total history of such a young girl would seem brief and unremarkable, but nothing could be farther from the truth with this special young girl. Words and anecdotes will fall far, far short in this brief attempt to describe Tasia, so diverse and often profound. As we discuss crash rates and road engineering, study statistics, and review charts, it would be easy to forget how the loss of a single life affects hundreds of people. A classmate of Tasia's asked the question, how many more have to die before something is done? At first, this may seem a trite cliche, but as the numbers mount, it begins to become quantitative. A student, a seeker, an activist, and a community volunteer, Tasia had vision and depth, and she touched many with her kindness and smile. And her loss was truly a loss to the world. As more and more lives full of potential are lost, the cost of saving these lives becomes more and more insignificant. In the days following Tasia's death, so many said, I can't imagine what you are going through. And until you stand and look at a wrecked car laying in a creek and a tarp covering a 17-year-old girl that was suddenly gone, you truly cannot imagine. Until you see the heartbroken faces of hundreds of her friends by candlelight, tears streaming down their faces, you cannot imagine. Until you console a 16-year-old sister and a 6-year-old brother and a heartbroken grandmother, you cannot imagine.
For Tasia's senior project, she planned to get every 18-year-old senior at Scappoose High registered to vote. She was mentored by the mayor of Scappoose, Scott Burge. She planned to prepare a packet explaining the party's key issues in a way that students could understand, as well as having a booth set up for easy registration. She was planning to take this beyond Scappoose as well. She planned to attend Southern Oregon University and major in industrial studies with a master's in teaching. Approximately 2 weeks after Tasia's death, we found out she was accepted to that school with honors. She planned to move to Africa and open up a home for orphans and homeschool them. She had a lot of plans. Tragically, those plans were cut short on New Year's Eve on Cornelius Pass. Just days before her 18th birthday, Tasia's death was an unspeakable loss to her family, her friends, her school, and her community. At her memorial service, speakers including her mentors, teachers, and friends spoke at Tasia's impact on the world around her. Her engaging smile, big ideas, and friendly spirit early impacted hundreds of people she had met in her brief life. Tasia left behind a to-do list, which included many profound things, but in essence, as many have stated, she believed it was her destiny to change the world. We will never justify Tasia's death, regardless of the outcome. However, we are determined to honor her life and try to complete her destiny. We believe that if one life is saved, Tasia has changed the world. And I have a very big heart, and all these kids behind me are going to be driving over that road. Will you please help my family?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Hoggins, are you wanting to speak next, please?
She's a little later.
Oh, okay.
Come on, let's go. For those of you that don't, and I'm not sure how many frequently travel Cornelius Pass Road, we do have a video that we'd like to play, and I will stop it in some places and point out some of the more important. It's a 5-minute video. Basically, we just passed Skyline Road and are heading down. We're going to show some pictures later in the presentation as you round this corner of three or four vehicles that are down that 150-foot embankment right now. The residents of the road tell us that about once a month they'll close the road down, get the tow trucks up there, and pull the cars out because recovering them takes hours. This is the only update that has happened to Cornelius Pass in 30 years, and it was the result of a slide and the fact that the corners were so tight the trailers were overturning going around this corner. Mm-hmm. And so it has an engineered embankment to keep the erosion and the slides at a minimum. And this is a very, very sharp corner. And it's also the only corner on Cornelius Pass that has street lamps, although the power lines run all the way down. If you keep an eye on the shoulder, we're going to point out some areas later with still photographs. This is one of a few guardrails. And we're going to be coming up on Sheltered Nook, which 40% of the accidents on that road for the last 5 years have happened at Sheltered Nook. And we'll point out some of the reasons why. This is absolutely best case scenario. It's during a commuter time, so speeds are good. It's in the daylight with dry road conditions. And this is not often the way that the commuters drive. In fact, if you look at the traffic studies, the counts from 06, from 4 to 6 a.m., which is dark, wet, and often slippery, is a huge portion of the commuters on this road. Let me know when we get close to Shelton.
I'm really surprised how few trucks we've seen so far. This is unusual.
Mm-hmm. It really is.
I have to say, I was up there yesterday with Megan. We were taking some more pictures, and we had trucks just blowing by us.
This corner is interesting because it's obviously a very sharp angle in a small amount of travel space, and then should you miss it, you can see there's no shoulder, and that's about a 35-foot drop there. Now we're coming up on Sheltered Nook. One of the more serious accidents that happened in the last few years at this intersection, a truck came around that last corner, and someone was trying to turn left onto Sheltered Nook right here. There were four or five cars stopped, waiting for uphill traffic. At that point, the truck driver, it happened a little further up the road, had three options. He could rear-end a line of traffic, he could put his big rig down a 50-foot embankment, or he could try to avoid it by going across the center line. He did that, pinned a minivan into the side. One lady lost her life from complications from the accident. Another man had his arm amputated, and six people were transported to the hospital. This is a very dangerous intersection. It's not well marked. It's not lit. There's power there. There's no reason that a flashing yellow light could not be there. There's no reason that as you exit the corner that we just came down through, that an intersecting light with a flashing yellow light could not be there. And there is adequate room on the other side of there for a turn pocket, so that the cars that are turning onto Shelter Nook can get into a turn pocket and not get rear-ended. About half the accidents from the accident report data that we've gathered happen from this point down to Highway 30. And kind of the reason is once you get through the S-turns, once you pass Shelter Nook, you go, I made it, and you relax. And that's why a lot of the accidents happen 3 miles from your home, because after a 100-mile trip and you get close to home, you relax. Unfortunately, this is shaded, as you can tell, most of the day. And so when there is freezing temperatures in the morning, there's spots where it never thaws out. We'll show some more pictures of where the fog line is immediately on a very severe drop-off. This was recorded on a day that we did a petition drive. It was Tasia's 18th birthday. And that was her crash site there. Relating to Cornelius Pass, but there's a large incidence of accidents on Highway 30 traffic turning up Cornelius Pass. And one of the reasons for that is there's no decel lane. There's a very probably 100-foot turn lane on Highway 30 right before you get to the light to turn right to go up Cornelius Pass. Again, there's plenty of room there that to put in a decel lane and get that traffic diverted off Highway 30, which may be clipping along at 55 or 60 miles an hour. But driving that road every day, we often find somebody has got hit trying to get over to turn right up Cornelius Pass Road. So there's several pockets that have more incidents of crashes. Mm-hmm. This road's classified as a rural arterial. A rural arterial by the standards of Multnomah County, which I will show you in a moment, is peak traffic of 11,000. The 06 traffic counts that we did show that we're at that peak, and with the expansion of the Bethany area where they're going to have 1,500 acres of more housing, we expect that it will be 20,000 very quickly. So the classification for this type of road is not suitable for where we're at now, and it's obviously not suitable for where we're going with the expansion. The combined demographics of all three counties, Columbia County, Washington County, and Multnomah County, all add commuters to this road, as well as the trucking. We talked about the bicycles, really, as you went down that road in the car. Having to get around a bicycle without going into oncoming traffic would be virtually impossible. The goals of the functional classification for Multnomah County's PSSP is safety, number one. Primary objective is safety. Identify and analyze problems and alternative solutions, and that community input is vital to the transportation planning process. Now, at the suggestion of the Multnomah County Sheriff's Department back earlier in 07, they went to the county and said, we need to do something about this road. It's a dangerous road. And Multnomah County Planner Ed Abrahamson and some other people have went forward with some meetings. As of now, there hasn't been any public input on that. And so that's one of the key facts that we would like to bring is that we would like to be involved from a public standpoint in that planning. So the red arrow points at a rural arterial. As you can see, it wants normal traffic flow from 7,000 to 9,000 and peak of 12,000. Mr. Abrahamson has the 07 traffic counts, but we are at that peak. And if you look at even the next step up, the minor arterial, that only gets us to 16,000. So we're almost going to have to leapfrog the minor arterial and go to a major arterial if it's going to be kept as a county classification. Our research indicates that the feds require the counties to report their FCs to the state on census years. And I'm not sure when the last time that would have been done or what the results of that are. But identifying whether or not this is a appropriate functional classification for the current use, especially with the truck traffic and the expected growth of it over the next 10 years, I think is pivotal in trying to decide which direction that we should go in. One of the other statistics that we found was that if the truck traffic exceeds 10% of the total volume, that it becomes more important in the functional classification. Based on the numbers that we had from the 07 traffic counts, were 12 to 15% truck traffic on this road at this time. This was a research laboratory survey done in June of 1997. So 10 years ago, these were ad-lib comments from the people that live and use those roads and was presented to Multnomah County. The ironic thing is that these conditions still exist and nothing's been done. Speeding drivers, too many cars, too much traffic, increasing traffic, narrow shoulders, cars and bicycles not sharing the road, overuse of small country roads, poorly planned and managed road maintenance, roads doesn't support the traffic, quarter visibility is poor, three-way intersection, very sharp corner with no signal. That was the sheltered nook that we went over. And development is beginning to be a problem. At this time, that was a 5,000 car a day road. And now we're twice that, and we're looking at being twice that again. And so back in June 97, we knew exactly what we know now, but we haven't done anything yet. And that's where the loss starts to become quantitative. So some of the technical or engineering issues that we're facing is the curvy alignment. You almost get queasy watching the video going down. Some of the corners may exceed current standards in terms of degree of turn in a certain number of feet. As I said, I'm not a road engineer, but I would request that the people that are look into those. Super elevated turns have been one suggestion to keep those semis from tipping over. Shoulders, we talked a great length about. We made several shoulder measurements. This one is 5 inches, and I will say that in doing this, if you step off the concrete into what looks like gravel there, the weight of a 200-pound man will sink you in 2 inches. And the grade that it drops off, and some of the other pictures will show that a little better, in this 36-inch span, the drop between that tape measure that was being held level and that embankment below it was 3 feet. And so any error in crossing that, it's... Ed, can you tell me what that degree is?
There is no margin for error. Yeah.
Is that 30 degrees or 40?
If you're going to speak,
degrees?
I have to have you come up front. I can't have to.
It's about 40 degrees.
Thanks.
Here's 2 inches of shoulder. And this is a section of road that had eroded. They did some repair to it, put some gravel in it. And as you can see, the fog line is at the drop-off, and it's a severe drop-off. Trucks often will try to move away from that. But as some of the slides upcoming will show, based on the erosion that we're seeing underneath the roadway, the repetitive heavy truck traffic is going to erode it very quickly. This is up at the top, just as you pass Skyline. That's a 150-foot embankment. And as you can see, it drops off very quickly, and there's absolutely no room for error there. Let me catch up in my notes. A couple of the pictures of the erosion we were able to find. You can see that the subbase from the road is completely undercut there. There's another one, not as severe, but again with the heavy truck traffic on there. From some of the angles that I've been able to see, it looks like the road's been overlaid twice. And the road originally was paved.
I think in about the 1930s is when they actually paved the road.
So obviously the engineering at that time wasn't set up for the type of truck traffic that it's having now. Many marks of air corners are unprotected by barriers of any sort. There's a few feet of guardrail, as you saw going through the video, but not much at all. Preliminary estimates on the cost of guardrails, $25 a linear foot for supplies. Obviously, if it was twice that much because of the engineering that would be required because of the terrain, you're still talking $750,000 to install guardrails. It's not a lot of money. This is the sheltered nook. As you can see, power's there. Wires go across the road. We could really make substantial safety improvements to that intersection without spending a lot of money. The flashing yellow light, street lamp on the pole. On the other side, there's adequate room to put a turn pocket in. So those are some inexpensive options to reduce the 40% of the accidents that happen at that intersection. As I said earlier, ODOT standards, commercial trucking is greater than 10% of the total trips, then it's an elevated concern. And the numbers that we have, it's 1,500 out of the 11,000. So obviously it's greater than 10%. This is a truck that moved over because we were taking pictures, but had he been where he normally would be, he would be right on the fog line. This is something that is definitely missing from Cornelius Pass Road. It's a temperature-activated flashing yellow sign that lets you know there's ice present right now. There's a sign at the top and a sign at the bottom that says caution, ice may be present, but it's not temperature-activated. And at $18 a square foot to put a sign in like that, again, we're not talking about a lot of money, and it's an incremental change that can be made very quickly. We believe that if Tasia would have saw that light flashing as she headed down that hill, she would have stopped and called Mom. What do I do? Cornelius Pass is frozen over. Should I come home? A lot of other drivers at least would either find an alternate route or be aware that the driving conditions were too severe. There's been an effort. I'm sorry.
One thing I was looking for when you were showing the pictures going down the road, you didn't see the streaks of the de-icing agent being added to the road. Mm-hmm. Does that happen very often? Because we've had, almost 2 months of icing conditions every day, particularly in that dark and shaded area like that. Are you seeing much de-icing application?
Ed might be able to answer that question. Ed Abrahamson from the...
Ed, why don't you come on up?
I have an answer, but I don't think it's the...
I can say, as someone who drives Cornelius Pass every day, that they do put de-icer on the road on occasion. I don't see it every time that there's ice, So,
Mr. Abrahamson, identify yourself for the record.
Good afternoon, Chair Metzger, Senators, thank you for having me come up here today. I hadn't really planned on speaking, but I'd be glad to respond.
Well, we'd love to have your expertise.
And, but this is a heavily traveled road, so we're all arterial, and we do de-ice the road. I couldn't tell you the frequency, how long it lasts, and things like that, but because it is rural arterial, it does serve as a freight route as well. We do de-ice that road regularly when it is the conditions are appropriate.
I've taken two truck tractors without a trailer on them up that road. And it was really funny, as you were showing the pictures, I started getting tense. Okay. Now, picture pulling the trailers, but one of the issues would like to ask you about is this idea, and we almost lost Yaquinta Bay a few years ago when a truck hit an ice patch and overturned, and it was just a miracle that that wasn't dumped into the creek, into the river. This, if you have a fuel truck rolls over and it begins to leak into that stream, that is going a short distance to what?
Columbia River.
Columbia River and the estuaries and everything else. This is much more of an environmental issue than most people think, because the fact that we have so many trucks who are forced to go this way, mm-hmm. who in fact are carrying products that could be harmful to our rivers, our streams, and our estuaries. Would you comment on that? I mean,
I'd be happy to comment on that and a couple other things, and perhaps if you want to let Mr. Smith finish his presentation, because I don't want to interrupt that part, but I think I can respond to some of your questions with regards to the growth in the Bethany area in Washington County, the freight traffic that moves over there, and the types of freight traffic as you're indicating right now. I can try and respond to those.
Okay, one way, Mr. Smith, wrap up here, and then we'll get to the questions there. Yeah. Go ahead, Mr. Smith.
I would like to address the de-icing. Towards the end of January, we had a well-forecast storm that was coming in. Everyone knew it was coming. Cornelius Pass Road was closed after several accidents. One of them was a flipped car approximately in the same location. Then they called the road crews out and did it. So the analogy is if you see on the news that a storm's coming, the news media always runs to the Sylvan Hill because they want to get pictures. What we would suggest is that when we see a storm coming, and they've got 7 bridges to sand and de-ice and that kind of stuff, that this road be equally important to get out there before the crashes occur. And this type of a warning would definitely help us in that regard. Elizabeth's very quickly going to go over some of the crash data as well as the activism efforts that we have begun.
Thank you. Welcome.
Hi. First of all, I'd like to say my name is Elizabeth Higginson, and I'm a friend of Jim and Tammy. I'd like to give you a brief history, my history of Cornelius Pass Road. Several months ago, my job had transferred me to toward the top of Cornelius Pass Road, and I found out that I would have to traverse that road every day. Well, of course, one of the first things I do when I find out I have a new job position, I call my mom, and she said, "You know, you be very careful of that road." She said, "It's so dangerous." And the road that she was referring to is Cornelius Pass. So every day before, even before Tasia had happened, as I would turn onto the pass, I would just get a knot in my stomach because it's a scary road. I don't know if all of you have traversed it, but it's a scary road. And I wouldn't get rid of that knot until I had reached the little market there at the top toward right by Skyline and Cornelius Pass Road. And it was just finally a breath of relief that I had made it through that day. And it was the same way going home. I was always thinking, gosh, I wish they would do something to make this road safer. You know, I wasn't really questioning what exactly they'd do, but just make the road safer. One of the problems was, though, is even though I was thinking that, I never stepped up and said anything. I didn't take action, and I probably should have. But December 31st really changed that for us because, you know, we lost Asia. So since that time, we have just had a huge outpouring of support because of this situation. And I will talk about all of that later, but I would like to talk about some of the crashes that have occurred on Cornelius Pass Road. Over the last 5 years, there have been 95 reported accidents, and I have a stack of them. We have received those from the county, and we have been poring over them very diligently. What we've been doing is we've been compiling the information. We're trying to look for trends and patterns. We're looking for the areas where there are the main amount of accidents. And I have a map here that shows the accidents. And keep in mind, on the accident reports, it says the mileposts. So it's not pinpoint information of where the accidents have occurred, but it's pretty close to where the accidents have occurred. So I'm going to put this up.
Yeah, thank you.
But I'll show you. This is Highway 30 up here. And right here is Skyline Boulevard. I've marked in red where the fatalities have happened over the last 5 years. There have been a total of 4 fatalities on this short section of road. This, of course, is Taylor. And it's about a mile and a half, or about a half a mile from Highway 30. There was the fatality that killed the lady in the van here at Sheltered Nook. And then this really wasn't in our area, but I thought I would put this down here. There were a couple on a motorcycle, and they crashed there, and both of them lost their life. As you can see, there's a lot of accidents. It's really astounding that this is only a 3.5 mile stretch of road. I figured it out, and it's probably about 27, 28 crashes per mile, which is just astounding. Right? The blue pins, they indicate where the vehicles have gone off the road into the embankment. The embankment is anywhere between 5 feet and, like Jenny said, up to 150 feet. The purple areas are semis that have flipped over. And I know that you all can't see it very well, but this is where the hairpin turn is. And there's been at least 4 right there in the last 5 years. And another one here as well. I just spoke to Multnomah County police officer today. And he says this year, there have been 3 reported accidents on that road. So that brings our tally up to 98 accidents. And keep in mind that these are just the reported accidents. These are the accidents that are serious enough to mandate police action. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of minor little fender benders and other things that aren't reported. As Jimmy has mentioned, the big problem areas are Sheltered Nook, Skyline, and the Hairpin Curve. I would also like to mention, I don't think I have them all marked, but there were actually 26 of the crashes that went down the embankment. I can give you some examples. Senator Monroe, you had mentioned about bicycles. We were pouring through the information trying to find the accident report that pertained to a bicycle, but there was a bicyclist that there were 2 trucks that were going side by side, one up and one down, and there was a bicyclist on the side, and one of the trucks hit the bicyclist. I can't quite recall how bad his injuries were, but that did happen. And sorry to use you as an example, Mr. Abrahamson, but he's a bicyclist, and he said that is a road that he definitely avoids. You know, there's no shoulder, there's no room for error. As far as some of the other crashes, There was one where a police officer was called to the scene, and he couldn't find the scene. They had gone down the embankment, and he could not find them. He had to call and have them report back, and finally he was able to locate the people. There was another accident where the police say that if there hadn't been a witness to see the crash, that by the time somebody had found the the person that had gone off the embankment, that the person would probably have been deceased.
She is a quadriplegic now.
In Tasia's instance, the friends and family know that she was coming home about 10 to 10:30 in the morning. Her car wasn't found until 4 o'clock that evening. And it was actually just by chance, because somebody else had been searching for an elderly man that had gone missing. It's a horrible road, and I wish I had more accident information to share with you guys, but we are still compiling all of the information and getting all of the stats.
Well, you've done a good job of that, actually. So I'm very impressed, and it just goes to show you don't have to hire, you know, $10,000 consultants to make, you know, a map that tells an important story. So,
right.
Yeah,
you've
done a good job.
Thank you. And, well, I'd like to talk about the activism and the community involvement. As you can tell by the full room, we have quite a bit of involvement. Where to start, really, was when I called Jim and Tammy and asked about doing a little petition. I thought, okay, we could have a petition at the memorial and get several hundred signatures, and we could move forward with that. And I was very happy to find out that we had about 600 signatures at the end of the memorial and the candlelight vigil. We've moved on from that. We've had several petition drives. We've had one at the top of the pass. We've had one at McMiniman's Roadhouse there toward the top of the pass. We've also had one at the Scappoose High School. And with that, we have received a total of 5,100 signatures. And that's in a month's time. Along with the petitions, we have started a letter writing campaign. And what we are doing with these letters is we have an area where the people can personalize it and say, I'm a driver of Cornelius Pass Road. I have family that drives the road. I've been in an accident on Cornelius Pass Road. We have an area where they can tell their story. And then at the bottom, it tells their address and their information. And what we're doing is we've collected those. We've actually collected about 800 letters so far that we are mailing off to city leaders, commissioners, senators, and representatives. So if you haven't received one of those, be prepared. They're coming. With those letters, we have also, once we send a letter to a senator or a representative, we have a postcard that we mail to the person who wrote the letter. And what the little postcard is saying is that we have mailed your letter, and this is who we've mailed it to. Please contact them. So they will be giving you a follow-up phone call as well. So, in addition to the petition drive and the letter writing, we have also had 4 resolutions passed. I want to back up a little bit. For the petition drive, we have some students here that have copies of the petitions, just to show you the magnitude of the number of people that we have that are concerned.
This represents a third of the signatures that we've collected in only a month. And we have 4 to 6 additional drives planned over the next 2 months. Basically, we want to have a signature for everybody that uses that road, mm-hmm. 12 to 14,000. It's not a legal petition. All it's to do is to say, these people care. These people want this road fixed. And along with that, we're giving them a bumper sticker that says, pray for me, I drive Cornelius Pass Road. So hopefully we'll see about 12,000 of those going up and down the road.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you, guys.
So in addition to the letter writing campaign and the petitions that you've just seen, we have gone before several city councils. We have had resolutions passed by the Scappoose City Council, the St. Helens City Council, Columbia City City Council, and the Port of St. Helens City, the Port of St. Helens Council, just saying that they support that we're trying to improve the safety of Cornelius Pass Road overall. And once again, going back, I was talking to somebody who's interested in helping us on the phone the other day, and he was asking, well, would you like to have a booth at one of our sporting events that we could set up a petition and do a petition drive? And I said, oh, yeah, that would be fantastic. And he said, well, are you going to need people to man the booth, or are you okay with that? And I just kind of laughed because it's been referred to as Tasia's army. We have so many people that are supporting us in this because they really care and they know that what a dangerous road it is. We have a website set up that has had 26,000 page views. It's just astounding the amount of support that we have. So with that, I think I'll let Jimmy wrap it up.
I'll try to recap this real quickly for you. These are what's supposed to be the top 20. The bottom one fell off. But some of these things we went over. Some we have not went over, and for whatever reason. The increased traffic volume is double now, and we expect to be double again, and that's something Mr. Abrahamson can talk about. Commercial trucking elevates the concern on this road because it is greater than 10% of the trips. We showed you the inadequate, in many cases, no shoulder. The creek for this time of the year is swollen. It's more of a river than a creek. So if you land in that creek, you have a whole different set of circumstances affecting your driver safety. And many do. If you go down that embankment, unless you hit a tree or a pole, you're going to be in the creek. Slope grade is very steep, which causes engineering problems for a lot of the safety improvements that we need to do. But the very fact that it is that steep requires that we do the engineering. The road has a curvy alignment, and some of the turns are causing the trucks' trailers to flip over. The one driver that lost his hayload said he was going 5 miles an hour and just could not negotiate it. The erosion of the embankment is severe in some cases. Some repairs have already had to been made, and it's getting more severe. The clear zone and the inadequate line of sight is directly responsible for the 40% of the crashes that happen at Shelter Nook from uphill traffic because they come around a corner, they have no time to stop. Which also ties into the blind intersection. Emergency access really ties into the hazmat. If there was a spill, emergency responders do not feel that they have appropriate access to get there quickly enough and to divert traffic to contain and clean up a spill. And so that some sort of access needs to be looked at, whether it be off a different road, so that long-term, should that happen, the access is there. There have been some slides. So far, there haven't been major slides other than the one corner that's already been repaired. But it certainly is a possibility, especially with the wet winter we've had. Planned growth in Washington County is the major concern because those people will come over Cornelius Pass to go to downtown Portland. Multnomah County... Our Washington County's reports show that the Cornelius Pass side of Highway 26 hits every one of their top 10 radars, congestion, mass transit. Every one of them is on the other side of Highway 26. So that tells us that people aren't only using that side of Cornelius Pass Road to get to 26, but they're passing 26. And that traffic is going to go to Cornelius Pass Road. Long term, Washington County has a plan to build a 5-lane road right up to the county line at Multnomah County and then say, you guys deal with it from there. Thank you.
Thank you very much, all of you. Mr. Abramson, we went on here to hear from you since you were in the audience. Would you please tell me, first of all, what your role is with Multnomah County so we understand the area in which you're dealing with?
I'm a principal planner with the Land Use and Transportation Program.
Okay.
So I basically manage the transportation planning for Multnomah County.
Well, I think the first question I would have, and these people probably know because they have been so activists in it, but for the benefit of the committee, where on the radar screen in your planning for Multnomah County is improvements to Cornelius Pass Road?
Where is it? Let me first say, I'm very appreciative of the work that Jim, Tammy, Elizabeth, and everyone else has done. They've done a tremendous job of citizen activism. They brought us into it. We've been talking with them since Tasia's tragic death, and my heart goes out to them, as does the county's. We've met with them at the high school to discuss some of the issues that we're trying to do, what we are doing, trying to be proactive about that. One of the questions I hate to respond to is one the young fellow's here today. They keep saying, what happens? Do we have to wait for someone else to die? That's the one question that just shivers up my spine every time I give a public meeting. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to respond. Right. We don't have to wait. Mm-hmm. I can tell you what we are doing. I can tell you, I'll try and tell you factually. I can't make excuses, tell you anything like that. But what I can say is Tasia Bellwood's death this past New Year's Eve day put a spotlight on Cornelius Pass Road. That said, we were contacted, we at the transportation section were contacted by our sheriff's office last spring to say, you know, to talk about the number of crashes that were occurring on Cornelius Pass Road, what can we do to make it safer? And we have been working steadily in that time to take a look at what we knew. We look at law enforcement, look at some of the engineering things that we can do to try and improve safety out there. And it was very difficult given, you know, financial limitations and everything else. And in fact, just subsequent to Tasia's death, we'd already had plans to meet with at Metro's. I sent the Metro's Regional Freight Technical Advisory Committee because our sheriff's office said a good deal of the traffic that they're concerned with at that time was Hess materials, as well as truck traffic in general. The crash that occurred last April that they pointed out at Shelternook Road where a truck coming down was trying to avert some cars that were stopped to make a turn there. That was our real turning point at that point. We need to do something now, is, you know, what we can. So we're looking at hazardous materials. What can we do about those? One of our sheriffs is a hazardous materials person, and he doesn't want to try to address hazardous materials on that road, given the terrain and access to it and other routes that might be available today. So we started that process. We met with Metro to start to discuss that with the Freight Advisory Committee, which enlightened us to a couple of things, because Federal Highway Administration is one of the participants in that committee. And at that meeting that occurred not quite a month ago, I think it was the idea of doing what we call, what the feds call, an independent road safety audit review. And we have been discussing those. We had another meeting subsequently with Federal Highway and State ODOT just 10, 12 days ago, again, to discuss that issue. What can we do? How can we really start to implement that? Following that meeting, we met with our county council, our risk manager, as well as our traffic engineers, county engineers, and planning to discuss what can we do next and what level of comfort do we have, because there's an issue when you start to do an audit and what that may require of you. You know, our concerns are what can we do that is cost-effective and efficient that we can implement right away. We talk about trying to improve Cornelius Pass Road. Cornelius Pass Road is a rural arterial. And, you know, right now, my county board, one of their objectives is this is a rural part of Multnomah County, and it's to remain that way. Trying to provide services out there is very difficult. We don't envision this is becoming an urban area. It's outside the urban growth boundary. Part of the reason we're discussing it at Metro as part of the Technical Advisory Committee is because it does serve as a hazardous material route over the mountains there, over Cornelius Pass Road, and it has a substantial amount of freight traffic as well. What we've looked at is we put into our capital improvement plan improvements on Cornelius Pass Road. And we can put this into the regional transportation plan because it does serve as freight access at this time. We would take a look at trying to put in some truck passing lanes, as well as some other shoulder work and geometric work along the road. And those costs are somewhere in the neighborhood of $40 million. And that's just our first blush cost. And that's something that's clearly not affordable by us at this time. So what we're looking at, and I'll jump around a little bit because I haven't really prepared this, we're taking a look and say, what can we do with the road safety audit? What will we look at? We want to try and look at things that we can implement as quickly as possible that we can afford. So we can bring those in to make those a safe place to go. What that audit would look at, and this would be independent of the county, we'd bring in other people, traffic engineers, law enforcement officers, say traffic engineers, people from different parts of the industry, see what can be done to outline what they say, you know, whether it's guardrails. I mean, you know, part of the first push was to put a guardrail where Tasia Bellwood went off the road. And that's one thing that we would look at. And guardrails, like a lot of things, require study because sometimes they can be more dangerous having them there than not having them there. You know, the cold fact is, you know, and you know, if we look at it from the standpoint of where Miss Bellwood went off, so there's very little shoulder there. Sometimes, you know, when someone starts to go off the road, you have a chance to correct and come back on the road. Given how narrow the shoulder is at that point, if you put a guardrail right there, if they start to correct, they're in their guardrail, and they start to go back across the road. And unfortunately, and the video was great. It showed you where Miss Bell went off the road. If you'd seen the other side of the road, though, it's a rock wall. So now you start to set up someone that can go like a pinball between those. You have someone that's oncoming, you endanger them as well. So it's we have to look at all the traveling public when we look at those issues.
I have a question. How much of the stretch of the road, how many miles of that is Multnomah County and how much of it is Washington County?
Well, I think the area that we're talking about, which is really from Skyline Road, basically north or east up to Highway 30, is all Multnomah County.
Multnomah, okay.
It's about 4 miles, 3.5 miles. And it doesn't become Washington County until what's called Kaiser Road area.
5 miles.
Okay. Road is.
Senator Johnson had a comment.
I'm sorry, maybe I just wasn't listening close enough, Mr. Abramson, but I didn't hear the answer. Are you going to do the traffic audit?
We're proceeding with it right now. Okay. We're working with, well, we meet with Federal Highway again on Thursday.
Okay. Here are my questions. The first one is, are you going to do it? When does it start? How long does it last? Who owns the work product? Will the public be included, and will industry be included, the trucking industry?
Okay.
Will there be a public outreach component?
Yeah. I can't speak to the public outreach component yet. This is a new thing for us, a new vehicle for us to use, and we're working Federal Highway on this. What it does is it assembles an independent group, and we can charge what that makeup of the group is with Federal Highway. So that means including someone from various industry sectors and the public. That's fine. We want to keep that small because the idea is this is one of those things where you go in with, like a SWAT team where you go in, you make the analysis, and you come with the recommendation within a week or two. And what will happen is once the audit is done by this group, they'll come up with a set of recommendations. And then what's incumbent upon the county in this case here is that we have to provide a written response and how we're going to respond. And how we'll address those concerns that come out of that audit. What my hope is, we've just now got the comfort level of our risk manager and our county council to say, let's go to the next step. Let's talk about putting the scope of work together with Federal Highway. I'm hoping to get that done in the next couple of weeks so that an audit can be done, say, within 3 weeks to a month. That's my target.
That's great. I thought it would be a much more protracted process, and I understand the desire to keep it small. But there seem to be so many relevant players. Would Washington County be involved?
Washington County is involved, but again, you know, what I'm going to say, I don't want to say, you know, this is not going to be a big open process. The idea is to get an independent team in there who has a different familiarity with the road, and Washington County will help us put together the scope of work, you know, to say how we're going to address this given Washington County's growth.
One more question, Mr. Chair. Is Federal Highway paying for it?
I'm hoping they'll help us. Right now, they've given us an estimate what they think a study like this would cost. Right in my budget right now, I have some funds that I can put towards a consultant to bring that in, and hopefully, if we can't make up the full, you know, full cost estimate, the federal highway or the state or someone else can help us contribute to that. But it's important. We're going to try and do that with our budget that we have.
Yes, Senator.
I'm trying to recall. It's probably been 20 or 25 years ago that I was looking for a way to connect the West Valleys, you know, over to the river. And I remember flying through the area and thinking, is there any other way to go? Topographically, is there any better route than that canyon coming down Cornelius Pass?
Not to my knowledge. I mean, the only other one that might work is the one that goes up from Birkenfeld Mist up to Vernonia. That's to the north. But as far as when you, yeah, like I say, this is the best route right now for traffic, and it's a rural road that's now carrying commuter and freight traffic.
Could I have a follow-up on that? I really feel like what we're doing right here is putting a Band-Aid on cancer. I mean, this is a major problem that I've described is now affecting, you know, Yamhill and Polk County. The one truck, I believe, was my neighbor that flipped the hay truck and lost the load.
Mm-hmm.
My issue is this. If we go into Southern California, we're going to find canyons that are way worse than this canyon. And they've been able to get away to get down those canyons with major freeways. They face the same environmental rules that we do. I don't think they face the weather that we face with the freezing temperatures, you know, that hit so much of the winter in this area. I mean, I really see that this is really a project of statewide interest.
Mm-hmm.
I think of all the dangerous roads that I have in my district, and I have quite a few. I have Newburgh-Dundee, if you want to talk about a problem with gridlock. But I don't know of a road that's as dangerous as this road. And the only one I can think of in Senator Berger's district, because I used to have part of that area, is Highway 20.
Yeah.
And it's a very similar set of circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
And I really do believe that this probably has much more traffic. I think that we, as this committee, need to immediately look forward to what do we do to treat the cancer and not buy another Band-Aid. Any comments on that? I mean, I'm sure you guys would love to unload this problem, but Multnomah County onto the state, saying here it is.
Well, I don't know if it's only the problem. I mean, this is our Selwood Bridge of the rural area. You know, to be honest with you, unlike the Selwood Bridge, as Senator Monroe knows, you know, a lot of 80% of the trips have an end destination outside Multnomah County.
Yeah. Right.
But we're responsible for taking care of it,
mm-hmm.
And it becomes it's a financial burden. We have $750 million in transportation needs in Multnomah County. Half a billion of that is bridge needs alone. Our expected revenue over the next 20 years is somewhere around $200 million total. It gives us nowhere close to being able to do anything to something like Cornelius Pass Road as it currently is. What I can see doing on Cornelius Pass Road right now, you know, these Band-Aids, as we mm-hmm. say, it's like the Catch-22, where are we hurting worse right now, and this is why the Road Safety Audit Review will come in handy, is hopefully it can come up with some solutions that we can address, some real highly critical areas, is that right now Multnomah County gets roughly $100,000 in what we call regional state surface transportation funds from the feds that we convert over to rural roads. And it's not a lot of money, but that's our pot right now. We're in the red. We've taken out a loan for one other road project, a safety project in East Multnomah County, and we've taken out another loan for Sylvie Island Bridge. So our ability to continue to do this, we've already, you know, mortgaged the future in a lot of ways, is we can't do this alone. We get about $100,000 a year that we can start to put into areas like this. We're already focused some of our transportation rural funds like this to another high crash area out in East County. That's another person died about a week ago, 282nd and Stone. I don't know if you've heard about that one. That's on our list of fix as well, and that's where that money is going.
Senator Johnson.
Thank you. I'm just trying to get a scope of the cost of this audit, because trying to get to yes and to get the audit underway is one of my priorities. If Washington County owned a little piece of it, Multnomah County owned a little piece of it, ODOT maybe owned a little piece of it, the feds owned a little piece of it, I'm trying to get a sense. Is this a $100,000 work product, a $400,000 work product? What?
It's peanuts compared to that. It's... We were told by FHWA they typically cost $3,000 to $10,000. I think that's very light. We're going to find out real soon.
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't know what other impediments are between you sitting here right now and this audit. I mean, you've touched on a couple of them. Your lawyers and your risk auditor, your risk management folks, maybe not wanting to know how bad this is, and the audit would produce that kind of information. But if we're talking about a work product, let's say worst case, inflated, worst case, $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
And you have four participants, and I just bet you that the Tasia Bellwood Foundation that is out gathering money might want to participate financially. You've solved your funding problem to get the audit underway. And if it can be done as quickly as you say it could be, at least then we have a baseline to know what we're all shooting from.
Mm-hmm.
If we are cowed back by risk auditors not wanting to know what the answer is, we will wait until somebody else is dead.
Yeah.
And so I'm just trying to see if there's a mechanism to get to yes today.
I said we're meeting with FHWA again this Thursday to proceed with that and start put the scope together.
One more follow-up. It seems to me, Mr. Abramson, that you might be in the awkward position of answering the same question over and over and over again for all of the interested parties. And I'm trying to solicit your opinion as a representative of Multnomah County and someone who works in this area. Is there a faster, cleaner mechanism so that you would have a single point of contact? I mean, if each one of these young people and Mr. Russell from the trucking industry and the legislators, there are at least six legislators involved in this, if we all call you independently and you have to tell us all the same information or go gather the same or different information for us, that seems to be a pretty colossal waste of your time. Can you tell us a pathway that might make it easier for you to deal with the plethora of questions and interested parties and to get us to a point where we're passing information in a more coherent way?
I wish there were, but I'm the point person right now. We're not a big staff, and you know, we're dealing with it as quickly as we can, is what I can say. We've had very good cooperation from other members of our staff, because when we say we need something now, they've been able to produce that for us. And that includes from our risk management, our county council, our engineering, and our sheriff's office, as well as our board of county commissioners. I mean, they're with us on this.
And Mr. Adams, Commissioner Adams, is the principal commissioner in charge of transportation.
Ted Wheeler for the county.
Ted for the county. Okay, sorry.
Chair Wheeler is.
Yeah. Senator Monroe?
Yeah, a couple of things. First of all, I'd like to praise all of you. This is political action at its very best. It's too bad this beautiful young lady had to give her life to facilitate this kind of thing. But I applaud what you're doing. Transportation is something that I've been thinking about for a long time, more than a decade. I was the head transportation guy on the Metro Council. And we ran into this frustration of jurisdictions. I mean, the people that use Cornelius Pass Road in Multnomah County, most of them aren't Multnomah County residents. They come from Washington County or Yamhill County or Columbia County, and they're going someplace else. And yet, Multnomah County is responsible for that chunk of road. Same thing you mentioned, the Selwood Bridge. Same thing there. It's a frustration when you have to deal with one jurisdiction that maybe has the responsibility, but that doesn't really represent the whole of the problem. That's why Ted Wheeler and Peter Bragdon and others have talked about maybe a region-wide, a metro-wide transportation package to create some money to fix problems that are not really jurisdictional problems for Multnomah County or for Portland or for Beaverton, but really encompass the entire region. We wish there were more federal transportation dollars. We wish there were more state transportation dollars. This legislature, I believe, in 2009 will be working very hard to create a major transportation funding package. In the meantime, though, it strikes me from your demonstration of the problem and your video and your discussion that there's a lot of little things that could be done to make this piece of road much safer. Building a new road up that valley and making it much wider and cutting into those banks probably not the answer because of the slide problems and so on that occur anytime you cut deeper into those banks. Then when it rains a little and the trees and the mud come down, we've seen that all over the West Hills area. So maybe that's not the answer, but some lighting, some flashing warnings, some guardrails were appropriate, some adjustment in speed limits, things like that could be done to make this piece of highway much safer for a relatively few dollars, you know, while we're waiting for the big dollars to make the big fixes.
Okay. We got to get close to wrap up. We're almost done with our committee time, but a couple of things, and I want to really thank all the young people that are here today. Are you all from Scappoose or from various schools? Okay. One of the things that this committee has been dealing with over the last few years, and will, as Senator Monroe pointed out, will be dealing with in the rest of this year, is working on the transportation needs of the state, and that encompasses all the political subdivisions such as Multnomah County, the cities, Scappoose, Portland, whatever. And I will tell you that this is a great opportunity for you to be here and for us to have you here, because you're going to be decision makers in the future. And it's really, it's too bad when we have tragedies that kind of heighten issues. But, you know, it's kind of the human, element of that really focuses our attention. But, you know, in our state, we have serious transportation problems in hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars that translate into human risk and tragedy that we haven't met. And part of it is, our responsibility as a citizenry to understand that we need to provide access and safety. And there is a cost for that. You know, a lot of times we want things done, but we don't want to pay for it. But part of the responsibility is, what is the appropriate answer, and how do we as citizens step up and say this is priority and I'm willing to help make that happen. So your activism on this issue is meritorious, and I can tell from your presentation very deep and will be longstanding. So I think one thing as we move on this particular issue that's so close to you and where you live, I think I can predict that over time, as this issue is taken care of and hopefully some immediate mitigation, that you're going to look back and say you had a significant role in that. I spent 2.5 months in the fall touring the entire state on transportation. And I will tell you, in every corner of the state, there are stories like this and serious needs that need to be addressed. We talked, Mr. Russell's here from the Trucking Association, and I know his member and the people who drive those trucks are as scared as anybody else. Mm-hmm. Our growth in the area that is feeding, that this becomes a conduit which was never designed to, is there. And then how do we deal with that, and how do we as a community take on that responsibility? Since you guys are from high school, I'm sure you've heard of Sam Barlow High School. Sam Barlow was named after the gentleman who was a pioneer in bringing people over to Oregon. And he was responsible for creating the Barlow Trail. Does anybody know what the Barlow Trail is known now as, what it's called? It's Highway 26 East. When you go to Mount Hood, that wasn't a freeway. It was the Barlow Trail. And people live there, and they have driveways, and they were never designed for traffic. And so you pave it, and you expand it, and it's known as Blood Alley because of all the accidents. We had a fatal there on Sunday when I was coming back to the state capitol and had to drive around again. It was never designed for this type of, it's a different type of safety issue than what you have on Cornelius Pass, but the same result, the same tragedies that we deal with. But as a state and as a citizenry, we have to address those. Here's what I would like to do. A couple of things. I applaud your efforts, and I realize, Mr. Abramson, you're not the spokesman for Multnomah County, so it was kind of you to come and take the load for the county, even though that's not your specific assignment, but your expertise was very well appreciated. We want to be kept informed of what's happening. I know you have everybody in this room is going to be doing the same, but I think the legislature wants to really follow this issue. I think as we build on a transportation plan, this really helps articulate the needs of this state and what we need to get done. One recommendation I might say, Mr. Abrahamson, as we move forward, and at least in this preliminary stage, which is for the study, which isn't a lot of money, I will make a recommendation, and I will call Commissioner or Chair Wheeler. In fact, I think he's going to be down here soon, and I will tell him in person, is that on October of this year, Multnomah County will be getting $400,000 from a bill that we passed last session to give counties $56 million. And Multnomah County wasn't one of them, but we just gave them $400,000 to make them feel good. So I realize that there's a lot of needs for that $400,000, but it is unexpected money. So my recommendation is we take a little of that to make sure this happens. So there, you know, since it's something the legislature is giving that was not part of the original budget, I think that would be an appropriate a little small section of that to make sure that things take place. And what I would like to do is then, if you would be so kind, Senator Johnson, is to appoint Senator Johnson to head a work group up so that the legislature continues to work on this issue from our perspective, not only watching what else is happening, but helping to push that and see what role we can play as we move to a package for the 09 session that will address the Cornelia Pass issue in perhaps more comprehensive way. I'm going to ask Mr. Russell if he would nod. Would you be willing to do it? Mr. Russell represents the Trucking Association, whose members have the same concerns, would be a very valuable member of that. Mr. Abrahamson, I'll have you talk with Senator Johnson, whether it's you or someone else, but definitely we want a Multnomah County representative on that. I'm going to ask the Department of Transportation, because this is a state issue, even though it's not a state highway, their expertise, I want them to be part of the expertise on that. And then ask Senator Johnson, with your colleagues in the legislative arena that are impacted, and we visited with some of them today, to communicate with them so that they may participate as they would like. And if you would put that together and put together a work plan that you feel is appropriate and with the citizens, these are your citizens, so I'll ask you to reach out to them for whether it's the Bellwoods or Jim or others to be a part of your work group and not only watch what's going on but also give us your recommendations of what we can do on a state level to assist your efforts. It's just been tremendous to have you here today to see how the process works. And what I really hope, and I really do anticipate, that as time goes on, you'll see that this day here at the state capitol made a difference, a real difference. Yes. Senator Johnson.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair, for that call to action. The reason I was smiling at you was that Columbia County also is a beneficiary of $400,000 that came as unexpected money, and I see one of our first jobs of the work group is to have a little visit with the County Commission and make sure that Columbia County would be fully able to participate if a study were commissioned.
Mm-hmm. That would be great. Thank you for taking on that, George. Yes, Senator George.
Just really quickly, since we have all these young people here and they're really bright and they know no numbers, I want you to just be thinking about a few numbers. And part of the idea is not to go out for a brand new package of a lot of new taxes, but actually to get some accountability for the money that's already out there. Now, just the other day, we had TriMet in here, and they were talking, of course, about, you know, the light rail and the problems. I asked the question, how much are you collecting today from the payroll tax to subsidize the fare box on the TriMet system? $178.5 million per year. We approved last session, and Senator Johnson, you correct me, she was chairing Ways and Means, $4,600 million in gross revenue. We gave the cities and counties a very small percentage of that, under $1 billion. Now, my point is this. We just got through spending over a period of years about $30 to $35 million to study a roadway that they decided not to build. $30 to $35 million in studies. Okay, that ought to offend you. And one of the issues is right now is you got to remember that number I just gave you of $4,600 million was for 2 years. That's what you guys have put into this system. So we've got to demand accountability. I've recently been doing my own investigation of what does it cost us to buy this? What does it cost us to buy an underpass or an overpass or a bridge? I have been shocked at how little we actually pay the contractors to build these roads and these structures. It's not very much when you look at what we're told it's going to cost. I want you to think about this. For this $4.6 billion and about $3.5 billion for ODOT for 2 years, we have 7,418 centerline miles of road. Take, when you get home, you divide that first number by that second number, and you look at the unbelievable amount of money that we're putting into this system, it's going to be up to you to demand accountability. One of the reasons that I'm leaving this building and I'm not going to be running for office and is that I've reached my level of frustration. It's going to be up to you to demand accountability. There's three ways we get money for government. Number one, you raise taxes. Number two, you allow the economy to grow. And number three, and this is what I hope you remember, stop wasting my money. Stop wasting your money, because every day you drive that road, you're paying an enormous amount of gas tax. You're paying 43.5 cents for every gallon of gasoline you burn for taxes. What did you get on Cornelius Pass Road? Thank you for letting me vent.
Thank you. And that gas tax now pays only 35%, since it hasn't been raised to what it used to. So, and concrete and asphalt's a lot more expensive now. So we all have a task to do. I think Senator Georgie raised some very good points. It's investment, it's accountability, it's focus, it's priorities. Yes, sir. And then we're going to conclude.
Chairman, 2 minutes. One of our call to actions at the conclusion of this presentation today was to ask for a task force, multi-local agencies, political representatives, and the community to identify the options and the incremental changes that we can make. Would we love to see a four-lane highway go in there with a four-foot median and eight-foot shoulders? We would. We recognize that that's probably not going to happen immediately, but at some point it may be in the planning stages. Mm-hmm. I'd like to point to a Caltrans task force for Highway 25. It was a nine-mile stretch where they had a lot of crossover accidents. They put that in a task force. From the date of their first task force until four stages were complete and that road was done was 3 years. And they did it for $1 million a mile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
I think that can be done. Secondly, I believe that if possible we could make that road a safety corridor, have huge signs at the beginning and the end, influence driver safety, let them know about the dangers, and address that side of it while we're progressing with the other things.
Well, I think that's very doable. In fact, I helped co-author the safety corridor language back in the late 90s and established one of those at Highway 26, which is now part of it has been removed because it has been successful.
Right.
So I think that's something we can get right on. I'm going to let Senator Berger conclude.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to do that. I've worked in transportation for a good many years, but today I'd like to close the committee hearing by on a little bit of a different note. I'd like to extend my condolences to the family for the loss. I can think of nothing worse as a mother of four to lose a child. I also want to say that the life of this young woman was obviously spent in kindness and in thoughtfulness. Otherwise, we wouldn't have this room full today. I did not have to know her, but I know her because of your being here. And so what I'd like to just say to you is that each one of us has a responsibility every day to lead the kind of life that if we're gone, we could fill a room. So I hope that you'll think about that with your own life, and I look forward to being a part of helping you solve this problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Jigger. Thank all of you, and Senator Johnson, we'll look forward to your task force work. Thank you all. We're adjourned.
Thank you.